It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
You're tuned to Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, a special edition recorded in Boston at the Westin Copley. What is here? The C-Suite Network Conference. We have an incredible lineup coming up this evening. Armand Ghosh and Ryan Jeffrey, they are partners at the 11 Ronin Company. They have some really great inspiration and advice about startups. That's going to be one great interview. Then we're going to be interviewing David Meerman Scott, internationally acclaimed sales and marketing strategist and best-selling author. He has some really incredible advice. He actually spoke here at the conference and an incredible presentation. And then finally, we're going to have Ira Ozer. Ira Ozer actually is a certified recognition professional. He is the president and CEO of Engagement Partners. And really looking forward to these interviews, really special event that's happening here in these days. You know, when people take time out from their business and attend a conference, there's so much inspiration, there's so much education that a person could walk away with. That, of course, a person has to show up at their day job and do what they do best at 9 to 5 plus. But at the same time, when they have a chance to step away from their desk and get to hear new ideas, the mind opens up. I'm here with Pesach Trapper, the producer of Mind Your Business. Pesach, well, how does it feel stepping out of the office, hearing new ideas, attending a conference here in Boston?
Any thoughts? So it's really been great. The energy here is high. It's that of C-level executives, thought leaders. And I think everyone is really here, eager to learn. That's kind of what we're picking up. And we are here to learn as well. And we're really excited about the great lineup of speeches we've heard and are continuing to hear for the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, and we had the honor, actually, of presenting on stage together about our new product, Team Ahead, which we'll be talking about in the coming weeks, which is a special product that we're rolling out for a company to build corporate culture. And, of course, we thank Annette Lucas and Mark Bodner of L&R Distributors, an important client of ours, for the opportunity to build their communications platform for their incredible team of 1,100-plus. So we had the opportunity to present it on stage here. Any other takeaways from this conference, Pesach?
It's just really about the quality of the event as well. So, of course, it's critical for business owners and executives to take time and, you know, spend time meeting new people, learning new ideas. But it's also important for the, you know, I think that it should be of quality. And in C-Suite, we definitely see that. I actually met someone here last night who said her role, I never heard about this, is she attends conferences and then advises other businesses in which conferences to attend.
Wow.
And that's exclusively what she does.
Wow, can you imagine?
Because there's so much out there.
People don't realize the extent of research.
Right, and she puts it together. And so what I took from that was that, of course, it's critical to be constantly learning and innovating, but equally to make sure you're maximizing your time, which I think C-Suite is a great use of time.
Yeah. So special thank you to Jeffrey Hazlett, Tom White, and Carl Post for inviting us here. Stay tuned for an incredible edition coming up. You're tuned to 77 WABC and around the world at WABCbizradio.com. In case you're not able to listen to the entire show, we'll be up on the podcast in a couple of days, again, which can be easily accessed by going to WABCbizradio.com. So our first guest on this special edition of Mind Your Business, again, live in Boston. I have with me Ryan Jeffrey and Armand Ghosh, the founders of the name 11 Ronin.
There you go.
Now, these two actually have started a dozen companies together. We want to talk business, but first, that's amazing. How do you guys stick it out? Am I allowed to ask you on the air?
Absolutely.
Who wants
yes.
to jump in with that?
Well, I think, you know, it's a lot of trust. I think it starts with us being able to trust each other and being able to work from the ground up. We've learned the last 6-7 years working together, starting all these companies, that you have to be able to divulge a lot of the background work to the other person and make sure that when you do, then they're going to get it done. And that's how we've been able to do it.
And Armand?
I think it also takes us an equal balance of crazy, because, you know, when you
I love it.
when you're living in that life of being an entrepreneur and building companies, you know, it's not an easy one, but it's much easier to do it when you have somebody like Ryan mentioned that you can trust. So we've developed over time, you know, a good working relationship that we can really start to then trust each other to do what we need to do, which makes it much easier.
You know, I have to mention that I've met a lot of entrepreneurs over my career, and just. I met them a couple of minutes ago, Ryan and Armand. They just look so comfortable together. I mean, it's impressive.
So I spend too much time with this guy.
Yeah, you spend every single day.
I like they said,
life.
A lot of crazy. I like it, a lot of crazy. Well, okay, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs looking to kind of package that idea? They have an idea, it's in incubation mode, and they want to bring it to life. How would you recommend they do that?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot. When it comes to being an entrepreneur, it takes a degree of commitment, and it starts from day one. If you want to actually do it, you've got to then really identify why you're doing it. And for many entrepreneurs, you know, that's something that they struggle with. But if you have a real reason for why you want to build the business, and that's identifying a problem that you're truly passionate about and then really being committed to finding that solution, that's step one. Because you shouldn't be joining entrepreneurship or trying to be start a company just because you want to make money. Because if you're chasing, you know, money, you won't really be identifying something that maybe has any value at all in the market. So it starts for one, you know, identifying what the problem is that you want to really go after. And then from there, when you start to package what you'd mentioned, like the solution, the startup, and what you want to do, everything gets a lot clearer, right? And then there's the standard mechanisms behind every business that you have to think about that, you know, the books in school will teach you how to do it. But at the end of the day, the thing that really matters is if you have that passion, you'll actually be able to execute.
I think I'll add quickly that I think it starts with just doing it, right? I think that there are so many people that we've talked to, and we give advice to entrepreneurs and talk to people that are thinking about starting a business that have great ideas. And a lot of the reasons why people don't get it up and off the ground is because they don't take that first step, which is going out and talking to customers. It's talking to potential target audience or target customers that you'd want to go after and sell. And once you start doing that, you start getting that feedback, you have a much better understanding of what it is that you want to actually sell. And then you're going to have a much better understanding of what it is you should build and go out there and actually do so. And that's where a lot of people get held up, is they don't take that initial first step.
So Ryan, I'm going to ask this question a little bit tongue in cheek. Listening is really important.
Listening is really important, especially when I work with somebody like Armand, because he likes to talk a lot. So, yes.
Oh, wow. You guys are a lot of fun and a lot of crazy. No, but that's what you said. What does 11 Ronin do?
So 11 Ronin was a company we started in November of 2014 with the idea that we wanted to build a platform that could produce startups in volume. So there's three core components to any startup in the technology space. One is a great founding team. Two is the actual idea in the business. And then three are investors. So we wanted to build a system that would allow us to address all three of those parties, and make it more efficient for us to be able to go to market with ideas. So we come up with ideas, we match very capable entrepreneurs to them, and then we match them with investments as well so that we can spin them out in volume and hopefully see some positive outcomes.
So are you a VC in and of itself, or you package it for a VC?
So we build the foundation of a business, and then we have a network of venture capital firms and angel investors that we've partnered with who then invest in these businesses.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that we're doing here is really building the ecosystem. Arma mentioned the three things that you need to do, but it's the ecosystem that will support and hopefully provide stability, tilt the pendulum back in the favor of the entrepreneur, right? I think one thing that we realize when people start companies is they're oftentimes out on an isolated island. We're trying to bring them back in and give them that support, guidance, resources, and then financial capital for them to hopefully succeed.
Amazing. That was Ryan Jeffrey. I'm here with Ryan and Armand Ghosh, the founders of 11 Ronin. They founded many, many businesses together, and we're coming to you live. The background noise you hear is because we are live at C-Suite Boston, a conference that happens a number of times a year, and this is a very special treat for us to be recording the Mind Your Business show on 77 WABC live from Boston. couple more questions, if I may. From your position as the founders of 11 Ronin, what are some ways that businesses can optimize their sales process?
Yeah, it's a great question. One, sales and product should be tied to the hip from day one. Sometimes people operate in silos where they try to build their technology or their product offering without necessarily talking to customers, and they think that what they'll build will naturally attract customers. And that's something we've seen in our past as just false. Your customers will tell you what to build, and in certain respects, you're going to take your own intuition and enhance what their perception is of value. But at the end of the day, from day one, you should be out there talking to your customers. So when you first come up with the idea, go talk to a couple customers and see if they see the world the way you do. And then from there, every part of the product development phase, you should be then going back to the market and seeing what their feedback is. So when it comes to sales, you know, the most effective way to come out the gates is to actually always be selling. Always try to go to market with what you have. And, you know, don't think about the product's not ready yet, or, you know, I'm going to keep it in the basement until I'm fully done with it. You know, go to market with it, see what the product, how it acts in the market, and from there be very confident that you'll be able to find the ideal solution.
Now, if I may ask the question that's probably on everyone's mind is listening, that are listening to Mind Your Business, is that what about the fact that, if I'm going to let the cat out of the bag too early, someone will steal my idea?
Yeah, I think that mainly because we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs that have ideas, and a lot of them do have those reservations around, well, I want to keep it close to the chest until I actually have something that's fully developed. And the problem with that is that everybody has an idea, and ideas are a dime a dozen. They don't really mean anything unless you go out there and you actually execute on it. And you start to build something. And I think a lot of that goes back to what Armand was saying around you have to talk to your customers. You have to go out there and talk to people around what you're trying to build and the problem that you're trying to solve. And once you do that, you're going to have a much better understanding of what it is that you should actually create. And by keeping it close to the chest, you're only hurting yourself because somebody else is going to do it before you then.
Great point. How can a business integrate its product, marketing, and sales kind of all in one? I know you touched on it earlier, but how can a company, from your point of view, how can a company do that?
Yeah, I really think it starts with collaboration and really making sure that you build a culture of collaboration where you have different people from different departments, different skills and different strengths, really talking to each other and being on the same page that you have one collective goal, not three different departments if we're talking about product marketing and sales, for example. Mm-hmm. So collaboration is key, and fostering a culture of collaboration actually isn't necessarily easy because everyone works very, very hard. And when you've got a full day of work ahead of you, it's sometimes hard to pop your head up, get some air, and then go talk to someone.
Right.
You've got to really build a culture where you make sure that happens. So collaboration is key.
That's one of the things that we're trying to do at 11 Ronin as well, is bring all three of those facets together. We have in our office all the companies that we've been able to build and launch. They get resources through product, through sales, through marketing, all those different facets we bring to the table to help the entrepreneurs that we bring into our ecosystem succeed.
Now, what is the best advice or your number one top tip that you would have for a business that's looking to grow?
I'll let Ryan start with this one.
Yeah, I think, we've talked about it a little bit before, but I think it has to be, you always have to be selling. You always have to be going out there and getting market feedback, talking to potential customers, figuring out what it is that their needs are and how their needs are evolving. And when you're doing those things, you're constantly optimizing your product and you're constantly optimizing what you're able to offer and how you're able to grow. And I think if you're doing those things fundamentally, then everything else is going to feed off of that. You're going to be able to set yourself up for success down the road.
Yeah, we joke in our office that we have what we call ABC, always be closing mentality, where you're going into every single conversation, not looking for a sale always all the time, but really having that proactive strategy to understand what customers want at all times. So whether it's an opportunity to actually get a contract signed and get a customer, or it's someone who said no to you, but you want to really understand the root for why they said no, you're always going to try to figure out how you can close someone because they will give you then the honest feedback for what your product should do. And for that, I think the one thing I would just add to that is as much as we love the idea of constantly selling, we are really big process nuts. So creating a real structured process around what you do, why you do it, and then being open to iterating on it and evolving it is key. So you don't go and start a sales kind of initiative with just pure chaos as its root. You want to build something with an assumption and then evolve on that over time with structure.
Amazing. Before we end off, I want to just turn to each of you. Maybe we'll start with Armand. You started over a dozen businesses together. What single tip would you give as a takeaway to an entrepreneur?
I would say don't let fear drive your decisions. Many times people have paranoia around the market copying them, or that their product isn't good enough, or that they don't know enough to do something. And at the end of the day, that's all fear. And if you can just really try to eliminate that in every aspect of what you do professionally, as an entrepreneur, you start to build confidence not only in yourself, but also in what the outcome should be. So it's not an easy thing to do. It'll creep up on you when you least expect it. But try to eliminate fear wherever you can in your kind of entrepreneurship journey.
Okay.
For me, it's start with the problem that you're passionate about solving, that you couldn't see yourself not trying to solve at some point. Because when you start a business, one thing that you have to realize as an entrepreneur is that you're going to be solving it, hopefully, for the next 5, 10, 15 years. And if you're starting something that you hope will sell off or that you'll flip in the next 2 years or year, you're starting with the wrong goal in mind. And you have to start with something that you're passionately that you care so much about that you're not going to stop at anything in order to solve that. And you have to start with that problem in mind, and that's where you're going to make sure that you can continue to grow upon what you have, because you're going to want to solve that problem no matter what.
Amazing. I had the honor of speaking with Ryan Jeffrey and Armand Ghosh here from here actually in Boston. They represent 11 Ronin. Question, how can someone in the audience, how can they reach you?
Come go to our website at 11, that's 11, Ronin, RONIIN.com. And feel free to shoot Ryan and myself an email, Ryan@Ronin, RONIIN.com, and Armand, ARMAN, @Ronin.com.
This is a real treat. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll be back again soon. Again, we're coming to you live from Boston, Massachusetts, at the C-Suite Network Conference. This particular one being held in Boston. I was at the previous one in San Francisco, and it's a real honor to be here, invited by Jeffrey Hazlett. Thank you, Jeffrey. We'll be back with another guest in a moment. Stay tuned.
Best Payroll delivers the affordable payroll solutions you need so that you could focus on your business. Today's payroll laws are complicated and constantly changing. Why should you have to worry about keeping yourself up to date with these details when you can rely on Best Payroll's fully bonded tax service to take care of it for you? Best Payroll has been managing the payroll needs of small to mid-sized companies across the country since 1989. Their experienced and dedicated professionals are committed to providing you with cost-effective payroll management solutions. Why spend your time, money, and effort handling your business's payroll when you could rely on Best Payroll to get the job done right at a price you can't beat? To learn more what Best Payroll can do for your company, dial 347-729-2355. That's 347-729-2355. Or visit bestpayroll.net. That's bestpayroll.net. Best Payroll, the experienced payroll professionals. Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So, What's the Bottom Line? As a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
And we're back here at Boston's Westin Copley. Why are we here? Because we're here at the C-Suite. It's actually not even a semi-annual conference. He does it a couple times a year, Jeffrey Hazlett and the crew at C-Suite Network. But you're tuned to the Mind Your Business show here on 77 WABC around the world at WABCbizradio.com. Thank you to our previous guests. And now we have the great honor of catching up with David Meerman Scott, internationally acclaimed sales and marketing strategist and best-selling author. I've actually followed David's work for quite some time.
Oh, thank you for that.
And I got to hear him on stage today, first time live. That was a treat.
Oh, thanks.
And get ready for some, I shouldn't say tough questions, because you can handle anything.
Fire away, man. Fire away.
You know what?
Away.
I'm going to start with the trip to Antarctica that you tried to convince your wife. Maybe you could take the audience through it.
Sure.
Because that will, of course, paint the picture at the world we live in and how someone has to market in 2016.
So I always wanted to go to Antarctica since I was 7 years old. And finally, I had enough money and enough time to be able to pull it off. And it's $20,000 to do. You know, it's not cheap to get your butt down to Antarctica. So I said to my wife, hey, let's go to Antarctica together. And she said, no, like flat out no. And so I have to try to convince her. And so I went on the web, like we all do. Every one of us goes on the web, goes to Google.
And you showed us your process of the search.
I typed in Antarctic travel, Antarctic expedition, and I got a bunch of results. And all of the companies except for one were just trying to push for me to buy a ticket. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to gather information to try to convince my wife how cool this is going to be so she'll go with me. And I found one company that was doing a great job. They're called Quark Expeditions. And the reason they were doing a great job is because they were providing me with the content I needed at the precise point in the buying process that I was. First gathering basic information. But then I needed specific information because she told me the reason she didn't want to go is because she didn't want to throw up crossing the Drake Passage. Because it's the most notorious body of water to cross in the world. And so I now had a specific thing, a piece of information I was looking for. And so I actually connected on Twitter with the CEO of Quark Expeditions, with their social media people. I reached out to them through email, and they provided me links to a YouTube video about what it's like to cross the Drake Passage. They sent me a link to a blog post on their blog written by a doctor about what meds you could take to not get seasick. I mean, it's real specific stuff, a link to the ship so you could learn about what the ship was like. And finally, after this took a couple months, but finally after a couple of months, my wife agreed to go with me. Yay, we're going to go. Woohoo. And we had a fantastic time. It was just
I saw the selfies.
Eye-opening. And to the point now that she's bugging me about wanting to go back.
Wow. And it all, I mean, I shouldn't say it all started. It all started with your vision to get there. But the vendor that you chose was because of content marketing.
It was because they had the best content and because they were the most engaged with me. And also because they understood that I was in charge of the buying process. The other companies had me, they wanted me to fill out forms so I could become a lead so that their salespeople could call me. But that's not going to work with me. Other companies wanted me, didn't want to give away their best content. They just had superficial stuff up there. But Quark Expeditions, they figured out the way I buy. And then they fed me exactly what I needed at each point in the process.
Now, here's an interesting question because, I mean, you're tuned, you're people of executives, C-level executives, turn to you from all around the world. How many would you say fit exactly your profile? Is it the majority or the minority in terms of that, hey, they want answers immediately, and if you don't, and they want full content immediately?
I think most people understand now that they're in charge of the buying process. Everybody goes to Google or other search engines. Everybody on some electronic media asks their friend and colleagues for advice or, you know, hey, I'm thinking about going to this particular place, or I'm thinking about buying a new car. Do you like yours? Whatever it is. We all do that. And so I don't think it matters what job function you have, what industry you're in. And I think that companies need to recognize now that buyers are in charge. And one of the most important aspects of that is that buyers need to buy on their time, not your time. What that means, I call it real time. So what that means is you can't control the process by saying, I'm going to give you information when I'm good and ready. Or you can't just like do an email campaign on, you know, 3 weeks from Tuesday because that's the day you choose. Instead, you have to be very attuned to what's going on in the world, what's going on in the news, what is your buyer doing right now? Are they on your site? If so, where are they going? What are they doing? And that's how you can be successful.
But it's so eye-opening the way you pointed out. It's that now with social media, that's the venue they're turning to. But anyone who denies that users will turn to their friends only just go read Malcolm Gladwell's books or something like that. I mean, we're not changing the fact that we're human. It's just that now this new social technology makes it so much faster, quicker, cheaper, instant that we just turn to it. So even if there's still some people living under the rock that don't use social media, they're using the old connections, but everyone is turning to someone else for advice and perspective and counsel.
That's right, and we all go to the search engines. And what pops up on the search engines is the best content. And you can't really game the search engines. It is all content-driven. And it makes me laugh that people resist the idea, but they themselves do it. What I mean by that is I'll have people who say to me, geez, David, you know, when I go to buy something, like a new set of golf clubs, I go to Google, I do this, I do that. And they're validating the fact that they themselves, as a consumer, use content to make decisions. And then, in the next breath, they'll say, geez, you know, we've got to do a direct mail campaign to try to get new customers. And then they'll go into their mailroom, and they'll throw out all their direct mail that they get. And it's like, how can you be so crazy as to not recognize that we're in a new world right now? Because we are in a new world. We're in an incredibly new world, and it's a world that is revolutionarily different. I mean, it is so different from what it was even 5 or 10 years ago in terms of the way people buy products and services. And that means that if you want to be successful as a business person, or even looking for a job, for example, you need to be the one that creates the best content.
Now, a short while ago during your presentation, your excellent presentation, I quote, "If you are using the word innovative in your marketing, you are by definition not innovative because the word is so overused."
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of words like that.
Okay.
There's cutting edge, mission critical, best of breed, all of these words. My favorite one is innovative because I actually did an analysis of every press release sent in an entire year in the English language. And innovative was the number one most overused. Yet, it's amazing how many companies use it. And you just walk around, even over here at the show we're at, mm-hmm. or anywhere, turn on television, and like some inane product talks about how they're innovative. Our toilet paper is innovative. What are you talking about? You know, the fact that you're using that word means that you're not going to be effective in the way you communicate. That and other words that are like that. So I think that you really need to understand who are the people you're trying to reach and what words and phrases do they use. Not just make up a word that you think is going to help you, because that's probably not going to work.
One of your slides was, I think, Twitter moments.
Yeah.
So you actually recommend that to,
well,
to get an idea, pulse?
I'm a big, big, big fan of understanding what's going on in the news and then tying your brand to what's going on in the news. I call it newsjacking.
If you have
an area of expertise about what's happening in the news. I call it newsjacking. And I got tons of information on newsjacking.com about it. So here's the way it works. I know you have entrepreneurs who listen to your show.
Yes.
Trent Silver is a 22-year-old entrepreneur, and he's got this cool business called Cash for Purses. What Cash for Purses does is they buy used handbags from people online, then they fix them up, and they either sell them on eBay or through physical boutiques, stores. Their biggest problem Trent has as an entrepreneur is getting more purses to be able to sell. So when he learned that Lindsay Lohan was having money troubles a couple of years ago, he realized, oh my gosh, I have a huge opportunity. So what he did was he offered to buy her used handbags, did a blog post, and then the media loved it because they're all talking about how Lindsay Lohan had money troubles, but now they had a different take on the same story. The take on that story is that, oh my gosh, she is somebody who could solve her money problems by selling her used handbags to this company. He ended up with 8,000 online inquiries. 12% of them closed for $250,000. And it cost him zero. The marketing for that cost him zero. So what I recommend that you do is that whatever area of expertise you have, follow the news. So that might be Google. I use personally Google News and Twitter Moments. And there's, I also look at a daily newspaper. Gosh, you could listen to 77 ABC, right? And what's going on? And then how can, if there's a news story of something that I can contribute to, get your take into the news right away through a blog post, a YouTube video, a tweet with a hashtag, whatever it is, and then the media might pick you up and your customers might see it. So I'd give you an example of what I did just this week. I'm a huge follower of the U.S. presidential elections.
Okay.
Just because I find it fascinating as a marketer to see what the different candidates are doing to market their candidacy. And, you know, the never mind the politics part or who I might vote for. It has nothing to do with it. It's all about the marketing aspects. And I found that Donald Trump, of all of the marketers, is the most real time. He's the one who's focused the most on commenting on what's going on a moment-by-moment basis. That's really interesting. So I blogged about it. And sure enough, the next day, I got an inquiry from an advertising magazine that wanted to interview me about a story they're doing about Donald Trump's marketing. So the reason I got that interview, and I'm going to end up in this magazine article, is because I blogged about something in real time, Donald Trump's use of Twitter, that I have an area of expertise around. And anybody can do this. Anybody can do this. And as an entrepreneur or business owner or somebody who's working in an organization or even someone looking for a new job, the idea of newsjacking, the idea of putting your content out there at the right moment is a great one.
So, you know, we're going to talk. We're on the air. This will air this coming Sunday night. Again, we're coming to you live from the C-Suite Network conference in Boston, Massachusetts. Today is technically Monday the 14th of March. But I'm going to ask you live because it's someone of your caliber. We actually run a marketing firm, Bottom Line Marketing, Marketline Marketing Group, and we have this radio show as a form of doing content marketing. So we're on radio. Great. How else would you recommend, if I may, that we leverage it in today's day and age?
Well, radio obviously can turn into content that's on the web as well. And I think you're already doing that, but turn it into a podcast, turn it into a video. Get guests on who are newsmakers in their own right, and then have them share on their social media, which I'll plan to do. Remind me before I leave, but I'll get the Twitter ID, I'll get the right link, and then I can send people when it airs on Sunday through my Twitter feed. I have 120,000 followers of Twitter. So how can you create a sort of infrastructure where the radio show helps your business, the business helps the radio show, and that the people you have on help both of them? And I think that that's entirely possible. And I think that if you look for a guest who can comment on something that's very trendworthy in the news right now, that you can generally have, I think, more interest than just a random guest.
Very interesting. But someone who's trending, someone who's
popular. Yeah, who's interesting? What's going on right now that you could grab someone?
Amazing. It's interesting. One of our guests that we had a number of months ago was Captain Sully Sullenberger.
Oh, yeah.
And it was at the time when they just announced his movie and who's going to be acting and playing him and his team. So you're right. That helped. And we actually wound up in the New York Post.
Nice. Yeah. Right. Because one piece of content drives another piece of content.
Yeah,
that's the way the infrastructure works.
Just like you're saying. And in fact, right, we wound up in there not because of the movie, because the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, had just announced a $4 billion makeover for LaGuardia, but they did not extend the length of the runways.
Oh, interesting.
So I had the opportunity of asking him, they'd say, they're redoing LaGuardia. Everyone knows the runways
there
are like
you're making news.
So short. And I asked him about it, asked him about drones and stuff, and it was picked up the next morning, and Monday
That's awesome. Good for you.
Thank you. Couple more questions before I let you go. How can a business generate attention in this content, in this web overload? Meaning, I understand everything you're saying till this point, but isn't there a degree of overload? How do you kind of fight the noise?
Well, I think that there's tons of information, but when somebody has a specific need for a piece of information, those people never think there's overload. They think there's not enough. I'll take you back to a story I told earlier in our interview. I mentioned that I wanted to go to Antarctica. And when I was searching for information to convince my wife to go, I couldn't find it easily. And there was really only one company that helped me out, Quark Expeditions. And so it for them, it wasn't overload. It was a different problem. The problem was, how can I understand enough about the people I'm trying to reach that I can create precisely the right content? So, you know, it's just a matter of, rather than writing about your own products and services or doing videos about your own products or services, think about what are the problems that my buyers face, what are the challenges of the people who might want to buy my product or service, what are the words and phrases they use, and then you say, okay, so the more I understand about the people I'm trying to reach, the better content I can create, and the more likely I am then to get found when people are looking for me.
Hmm. Any final thoughts for the listeners of Mind Your Business on 77 WABC?
Well, we've been talking about marketing on the web. I think this is so much fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been a marketer for 30 years. And I started when I was marketing my my lawn cutting services as a teenager. So that's how far back I go as a marketer.
Okay.
And it was always a drag. You know, you had to make brochures, you had to do this, you had to do that, press releases, all these things that were difficult and boring. But putting stuff out on the web, newsjacking, creating videos, you know, this is fun. So marketing can be really fun. And if you understand the people you're trying to reach really well, and you can reach them, my gosh, you can grow your business as a result.
We were speaking with David Meerman Scott. David, thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business. Thank you so much. Stay tuned right after the commercial break. We'll be back with another guest right here from Boston on 77 WABC.
Your company website is crucial to your success, providing information about your services and programs. It has to deliver just the right message, the right way, to make customers excited about what you offer and interested in working with you. Online, you have to be on the money to make the money. So go with the best, Website with Brains. Their experienced team will plan, write, design, and program a winning website that combines simplicity and flexibility with powerful features that will make you the king of content marketers. And they make it so easy. All of their websites are made with an easy, user-friendly interface. Website with Brains will have your new website up and running within 4 to 6 weeks. Take control of your online marketing today. Call Website with Brains for a free consultation and see how they can improve your online presence. 1-800-WEB-9018. That's 1-800-WEB-9018. Or visit them online at websitewithbrains.com.
Author, radio host, and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis, has written the essential book for the success-driven, fast-paced professional. So, What's the Bottom Line? Is a must-read for marketing your business and building your personal brand. Former U.S. Congressman and media executive Bob Turner describes So What's the Bottom Line as a compass to guide the experienced executive or marketing novice through any step in planning or organizing a selling strategy. So What's the Bottom Line is available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookstores nationwide. Get your copy today.
And we're back, coming to you live from C-Suite Boston, Weston Copley. This is our last and guest of this evening that we were able to get and present to our wonderful audience here on 77 WABC and to the listeners of Mind Your Business around the world by via WABCBizRadio.com. Actually, the app, the 77 WABC app, also can bring you the this wonderful show that airs every Sunday evening. And in case you're just tuning in, you missed some incredible guests, you'll be able to access the podcast channel by going to WABCBizRadio.com or the iTunes store, type in Mind Your Business. We should come up, and you'll be able to hear the entire evening, this entire episode, this one-hour episode, which was recorded live in Boston from the C-Suite Network Conference. Well, who am I with? I'm with Ira Ozer. Ira is the CEO of Engagement Partners. I'm going to jump right in and ask you some important questions because you do some pretty cool stuff for large businesses, medium-sized businesses. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Yitzhak. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. You are a certified recognition professional. What is that?
Well, you know, fundamentally, most companies don't have a very good culture of engaging their people. And all of the statistically valid research from engagement companies that have been doing this for many, many years, 40, 50 years, Gallup, Sirota Survey Intelligence, Hay Group, and many others, say that about 70% of a typical company's employees are not engaged in the business. In other words, they're there, they're working, they're doing their day-to-day job, but they're not adding any discretionary effort or value.
70%?
Yeah. 18% are actively disengaged. They're literally disparaging the business, just waiting to retire or leave.
A company is best off just, you know, firing them, basically, because they're dragging the others down.
And you can think of, everyone can think of examples like airlines. When you're on an airline and you mention something to a flight attendant in some cases, and they just say, oh, this is awful. Oh, it's like this all the time. We're always delayed. You know, they just disparage their own business, even though they're working there. But one of the key things that every company should have is a culture of recognition. Because people, coming from the research and practice as well, people don't feel recognized for their ideas, for their input, for their value. And having a culture of recognition is something that there's a formal way to do it. So about 15 years ago, an association was formed called the Recognition Professionals International, RPI, mm-hmm. at recognition.org.
Okay.
And RPI is an association of companies that specialize in developing recognition programs for companies, small, medium, and large, as well as corporate practitioners. So at large companies, companies like Boeing and IBM and American Express that have 100,000 employees, they actually have a whole department in their human resources area that focuses on their culture of employee recognition. Boeing has 3 or 4 people. That's their day-to-day job, recognition. So RPI has created a curriculum, a training program, a certification program, and best practices about having a culture of recognition.
This is amazing, this concept of culture of recognition. I'd like to talk about it more also because last week we had on as our guest Mark Bodner and Annette Lucas of L&R Distributors. We just rolled out for them this Team Ahead product. And they the whole show was devoted to building corporate culture. Now, of course, this is a critical component of it. You're saying the... naturally, we could talk about the whole picture, sure. But now we're focusing on culture of recognition. What specific takeaways, because there are many small business owners that listen to this program, what takeaways could you advise from your world of experience,
sure.
That a small business can do to develop and recognize its star employees?
Sure, a few things. And the principles relate to small companies as well as big companies.
Okay.
In a small company, arguably, it's easier to recognize people because you see them every day. Right? In a big company, you're distributed
right.
across the country, internationally sometimes, so you need more formalized technologies and things. But that being said, it starts with having the attitude and giving authentic recognition, where people really believe that you mean what you say and you're being recognized. And most people, silly as it sounds, don't realize that they're not recognizing very well. I think if you ask most people, can you recognize someone? Of course, I can recognize someone. You know, thanks a lot for doing a good job. It may sound cynical. They may rush it. They may not personalize it. They may not mention about why their person is being recognized. And they may not do it in front of their peers. So it's one thing to be recognized by your boss. People love to be recognized mm-hmm. by your boss. But if no one else heard it, maybe it doesn't have as much value as if they mention it in front of the entire staff.
That's a great point. So you're saying if it's just maybe a sign on the wall, but it's maybe doesn't even seem that genuine. It's just like kind of, okay, great, it's just a little plaque, as opposed to by a major conference, by a meeting, something done in a way that's perhaps public, but even if it's not in a big way, done very genuine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, so and according to RPI and the best practice in the industry of recognition, there are 3 types of recognition. And this applies to small companies as well as big. There's day-to-day recognition. That's where managers as well as employees peer-to-peer say, thank you, great job, I really appreciate you helping. Very important to have that day-to-day.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. You're saying even without a formal process, and this is especially important for small businesses, yeah. Don't worry about developing a whole formal process. I shouldn't say don't worry. That's fantastic, and it's especially important as you scale. But when you're small, just a thank you note.
There was
something.
Yeah, and there was a book written a few years ago called The Power of Nice. Very simple, skinny yellow book. Are you familiar with this book, Hitchcock?
Yes.
So
yeah.
It was written by Linda Kaplan Thaler and Robin Covell.
Sorry to interrupt.
No,
she was a guest on my show.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, she was a fantastic guest. Anyone that missed that one, you can go to WABC Biz Radio and listen to the podcast. She was a guest a couple of weeks back, so sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, and having a power of nice. So the premise of these, the president and CEO of an ad agency, Kaplan Thaler Group. Yeah, and Publicis bought Kaplan Thaler Group, but they started about 20 years ago, and they based this book on the premise that they grew their advertising agencies from $0 to $1 billion in revenue based on having a nice culture. Not a pushover culture, but a nice culture. Now, any business can have a nice culture, and that sounds silly when you say culture of nice, but they built a $1 billion business, so it really says something about that. But there are three levels. Mm-hmm. So the day-to-day is number one. Then the next level is informal. And informal means where you're recognizing someone, not just saying it, but you're doing something a little more. As you were saying, write a thank you note. Send an e-card. There are some great recognition platforms, technologies that allow managers and peer-to-peer to send e-cards to one another. And then click off things like the corporate values that a company wants to have. Companies might say, they're all a little bit different, but companies want people to be innovative, and they want people to be team players, and they might want them to be, you know, thoughtful. Whatever they are, the platforms can be customized for each business. Some are very sophisticated, some are very easy, and can work for very small companies. Mm-hmm. And the next level, so it's day-to-day, cultural, mm-hmm. right? The next level is informal, where there's a little more to it. Right. And the third level is formal. And as you were saying, those are formal recognition ceremonies. In sales, we call them typically president's clubs. Right? But every company can have them for non-sales employees, too. Every company, in my opinion, we work in developing in companies' innovative cultures as well.
Okay.
And every company could have its own Edison or Einstein or whatever its founder awards are for everybody who contribute ideas.
Now, I'm going to ask the question that's on everyone's mind listening to the show. Are there any type of metrics that show that a company with a great culture, that it translates into a greater bottom line?
Yeah, I know, that's a great question. Absolutely. The industry, the performance improvement business, has been around for almost 100 years now, and a lot of it has been based on hyperbole in terms of, we know this stuff works because it works for our company. But a few years ago, aside from statistically valid research that's been going on for years, it says that points out why people feel disengaged. There, 2 years ago, on October 1st, 2013, something called the Engaged Company Stock Index was created.
Fascinating.
A partnership between the Enterprise Engagement Alliance, which is an alliance of companies that all have the common mission of engaging people, but through totally different methods, and frankly, they're in different industries. So everything from engagement research to recognition to awards to merchandise to travel to everything that's used in training, leadership, cultural awareness, to motivate and engage people can be members of the EEA. That's at enterpriseengagement.org. A lot of great content for anybody, it's free, about how to engage people. But the EEA, in conjunction with an analytics company called McBassey and Associates, developed the Engaged Company Stock Index, and simply stated, it's been going on for almost 3 years, and it compares companies that have engaged cultures mm-hmm. with the S&P 500 companies in general.
Fascinating.
And the results are staggering. It shows that since the period of October 1st, 2013 to now, the engaged companies have outperformed in stock market growth by 35%. The non-engaged companies.
That's good.
And
that's,
you can see
hard
that,
numbers.
And you can see that at the enterpriseengagement.org website, how the methodology, the 40 companies that are engaged, and so on and so forth.
And I want to just preface that when I ask that question, it's not because I don't believe it. I mean, anyone with a brain, you have to. I mean, you walk into a store, if the person behind the the cash register is there with a smile and is there with a pleasant appearance, you're gonna return to the store. You're gonna want to do business with them. Whereas if it's a grouch, you know, it's a turnoff. I mean, yesterday we heard from Steve Rizzo here at the conference. He had an incredible presentation about the importance of, like you're saying, basically the importance of nice, the importance of being a mensch to everyone,
right,
if you will.
Right.
Let's move on. I mean, it's really a treat to have someone of your caliber. First of all, let me ask you a question. How could people get in touch with you?
Well, website is www.engagementpartners.com.
Okay.
And our innovation meetings business is innovationmeetings.com.
Okay.
My phone number is 914-238-2220. Be happy to speak with anybody about how to best engage your culture. And there's a lot of resources available. That we have free assessments. We have what we do is we take a company who wants to improve its performance, mm-hmm, through a process of discussing the strategy. In other words, how do we best motivate and engage our people? And where do we put the emphasis? Are they on employees, our salespeople, our channel partners, or our customers? And what balance is necessary? The concept of enterprise engagement is taking on steam because it's not just engaging your people, but it's connecting the dots between employees, channel partners like dealers, distributors, brokers, who, mm-hmm, they're independent. You know,
right,
if you're selling products through them,
right,
you need them to want to advocate for your brand. Otherwise, you're not going on the top shelf, you're going on the bottom shelf, as well as to customers. So you need a connection between that. So many companies don't connect those dots. They spend all their money on consumer advertising. We're a bank. We have the best products. They put full-page ads in the New York Times and the Daily News and the Post and so on and so forth. And then you go into a branch, to your point, and no one greets you. And you're here, I want to hear about that new offering you have. In the newspaper, what offering? Because they weren't told, they weren't trained, they weren't properly communicated to.
Now, if I understand correctly, your company also has a process to improve the performance of salespeople.
Sure, yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, and the research says that if a performance improvement program is properly designed, you can improve individual sales performance by 25% or more.
Wow.
And team-based performance by even 44% or more. So there's a lot to it. A lot of this comes out of the proper balance of using incentives and not just cash. That's a mistake where people say, well, just give salespeople money. They're just money motivated. The reality is all of the companies, especially ones that have cultures of money, Wall Street people, brokers, you know, people like that, real estate salespeople, where you think it's all about money, the reality is money works to motivate people to a certain point. Above and beyond that, they want aspiration, competitive drive motivates them. So the whole world is developing President's Club trips. There's a large business of group incentive travel where the top winners of a company get to go on a fabulous vacation with, you know, 200 of the top salespeople at their company. We're actually launching something new at Innovation Meetings in conjunction with the C-Suite, which is a collective President's Club trip. It's going to be known as the C-Suite Leadership Summit.
Fascinating.
And the concept is this. You know, every company, small and medium, has the same needs to motivate its salespeople,
right,
and recognize,
right,
them,
right,
that big companies do. But big companies, when IBM has, let's say, 1,000 salespeople.
Right, so they have the resources to do it all by
themselves.
Yeah,
they can top 200 people away, yeah, but if you're a $25 million company, you might have 20 fantastic salespeople. So if you take the top five away, it's nice to take them away, but it doesn't have the same dynamics of having a big keynote speaker.
Brilliant idea.
Right? So we're working on that.
Wow, that is amazing. One of the shows that we actually recorded here from C-Suite, and it's going to be playing in a couple of weeks, is with Ron Carucci. He's a leadership expert and wrote the book Rise to Power. And we actually asked him that question about how important is it the monetary number in terms of incentives versus recognition and empowerment and everything else. And he said monetary, you know, is lower down, is number five or six on the list. Of course it's important, but recognition, everything that you're saying is so spot on. One last question. You talk about performance tracking. How are you able to? I mean, that's wow. How do you do that?
Well, there's a lot of great software out
there.
Some are very simple and some are very sophisticated, but they involve allowing companies to design all kinds of incentive and performance-based programs, whether it's a quota-based system or a unit-based system. In other words, sell a certain number of units, and that's your goal. that allow people to set their own goals so we can compare their goal versus a corporate goal. People can earn typically award points that are accumulated toward either spots on a trip or prizes, merchandise, travel, you know, gift cards and things like that. And the best systems integrate training as well. Because it's not just saying to salespeople, sell more and you win a trip or win merchandise, but it's giving them the methods about how to do it.
Now, do you have a type of performance tracking approach for even non-salespeople?
Oh, sure. I mean, these programs are, there are three fundamental audiences for performance improvement programs. Okay. Salespeople is a big one. Customers is also a big one. When you think of almost every company has a loyalty program. So people are earning points and accumulating for free benefits or free merchandise or free things. I mean, if you think about it, industries like banking, which is all about, really should, all, you'd think, should all be about, come to our bank because we give you the best interest rate and service.
Right.
But people want something above and beyond that. Even though psychologically they know they're paying for those free toasters or TVs, they love to get it. It's a psychological process that works.
True.
And also employees. You can engage employees in all kinds of different ways.
Amazing. Any final thoughts for the listeners of Mind Your Business on 77 WABC?
Just that every company should have a culture of recognition, and that will lead to a culture of innovation and a culture of much greater engagement and dynamic selling. And there's a lot of research and white papers that show ways to do it, improve ways to do it, and be happy to send great, great articles to anyone who wants to contact me. And my email, by the way, Ira Ozer, I-R-A-O-Z-E-R, at engagementpartners.com.
That was the voice of Ira Ozer, President and CEO of Engagement Partners. This wraps up an incredible edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC. We recorded this live from the C-Suite Network Conference in Boston. Stay tuned for John Batchelor up next and tune in again next Sunday night for another edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night from 11 until 12 for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night from 11 until midnight on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.